Breaking news tonight from Paris as the terror attack ringleader is confirmed dead. Our exclusive interview with the masked SWAT commando who led the heroic raid on the concert hall, what he calls hell on earth. Hundreds of hostages cowered on the floor in fear, police facing down a ferocious assault by the attackers. Only a bullet-riddled shield between them. Also tonight, Richard Engel, inside the massive intelligence failure, the ringleader hiding in plain sight, right under their noses, with Europe's first female suicide bomber. New video of her final moments before blowing herself up as police closed in. And at home, how safe are we? What the FBI director is now saying is his biggest fear. Nightly news begins right now.
Terror in Paris. This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt, reporting tonight from Paris.
Good evening. We learned today the man believed to have hatched the coordinated terror attacks here almost a week ago is dead. Officials confirming he was killed in that blazing gun battle just outside Paris yesterday. But the death of Abdelhamid Abaou doesn't have this rattled city breathing any easier, and we'll explain why in a moment. But we start with an NBC News exclusive tonight. For the first time, an inside account of the Germanic police raid that ended the hostage siege at the Bataclan Theater, where nearly 90 people were massacred. The man who led the raid is speaking only to us, describing the daring assault from start to finish. For his own security, his face is covered, and he goes only by his first name, Jeremy.
By the time Paris's SWAT team, known as BRI, had arrived at the Bataclan, one terrorist had already been killed by police. Jeremy knew it would be up to his team to rout out the remaining attackers and free the hostages.
We took position at the entrance of the theater, and then we discovered like a hell on earth. I mean, more than maybe 7,000-8,000 people were lying on the floor.
7,800?
Yeah. Lying on the floor, tons of blood everywhere. No sound, nobody was screaming.
There was no time to help the wounded and dying. The attackers were still in the building.
So your team goes upstairs, yeah, into the balcony. Where did you find the terrorists?
In the last door, we approached the door, and suddenly one of the terrorists on a stage, we don't know, asked us to go backward. So I tried to speak with them, and he told me that he wanted to negotiate. So I said, okay, give me a phone number.
The terrorist identified himself as a soldier of the Caliphate and said he'd come to fight France and Hollande. No demands, just rhetoric, and time was running out.
This is your team. Yes.
BRI Commander Christoph Molny passed down the green light for the assault.
Their behavior was very unstable, considering they had already killed 100 people.
With no time to plan, the team had to improvise. They got the theater layout from fire evacuation diagrams on the wall.
This was the first thing that went through the door.
Exactly.
And it's pretty obvious what happened.
Yeah. As soon as we opened the door, one of the terrorists, he shot like between 25 to 30 rounds of AK-47 bullet. So 7.62 caliber.
And that's it. There's the
exactly. Holes. Immediately, we've got a guy in the middle of the group get hit in the hand, so he fell down because of the pain and.
One of your officers was hit.
Yeah, in the middle of the group. First thing we saw that the guy is shooting, and a lot of maybe 20 hostages between the shooter and us. We cannot shoot at that time, because it was too risky for the hostage at the end of the hallway. We found the two terrorists. It was like a dead end for them. And the first one blew himself with the explosive jacket. And second one tried to do the same, but he got shot by the two first BRI officers.
They were both wearing suicide vests.
Exactly.
And one of them went off.
Yeah, there was blood everywhere.
They rescued others who had hidden in other rooms, some on the roof.
When you looked around that theater, what were your thoughts when you saw what they had done?
For us, it was so intense, the assault, the bullets, the explosion, all the stuff. We're still very focused on what we did, to be honest. And maybe half an hour after, we saw what all the environment. And for us, it was very, very, very tough.
How are you guys doing? I mean, that's a lot to take in.
We're still together. We came back to the office and spoke together until maybe 7 in the morning. And maybe it's going to be some trouble for some of us in next weeks or something, but for now, so far, it's still okay.
But you saved a lot of lives.
I think so.
Police say none of the hostages was struck when the attacker detonated his vest during that assault. The officer that was shot was hit in the hand. He is expected to survive. And by the way, this same team known as BRI helped free hostages from a grocery store after the Charlie Hebdo attack and supported another BRI team in yesterday's bloody, deadly terror raid in Saint-Denis. Now more on the hunt for suspects, with police confirming the death of the so-called ringleader of the Paris shootings. At least one attacker still remains on the loose, and police are turning over every stone to see how deep the threat here and across Europe really is. NBC's Bill Neely tells us more.
His body was so riddled with bullets, Abdelhamid Abaoud was identified by fingerprints. The man who'd organized the massacres in Paris was killed when police stormed an apartment. Alongside him, his cousin, who blew herself up after a neighbor recorded her talking to police. Police today searched the home she left 3 weeks ago. At the massacre site's relief, Abaoud was dead.
It's a good thing they found him.
But for the grieving parents of Nathalie Lauren, killed at the concert hall, no satisfaction. It means nothing, her mother told me. My daughter is dead. CCTV video has emerged of one terror attack at a restaurant. Bullets shattering glass. The video from DailyMail.com shows a woman escaping, shot in the wrist. Customers hiding. And outside, a terrorist calmly shooting, taking aim at the head of a woman. But she said later, his gun jammed. No one died inside. Five were killed on the street. The threat to France is still real.
We cannot say today that this is an end. We think we are just in the middle of the storm.
ISIS threatened more attacks today on Italy in a video called Paris Before Rome.
D'armes chimiques ou bactériologiques.
The French Prime Minister warning today of the risk of terrorists with chemical or biological weapons. After the unthinkable here, that's a warning France won't ignore.
And France is still hunting for two men on the run and a bomb maker. The state of emergency here has been extended until spring next year. The Prime Minister saying France now faces a permanent threat from terrorism. Lester?
All right, Bill, thank you. And as the ringleader is confirmed killed, his death is only raising new concerns about what's being viewed as a massive intelligence failure. The intel community across Europe thought Abdelhamid Abaoud was in Syria. Instead, he was right under their noses, traveling freely, allegedly plotting the deadliest attack in France since World War II. Our chief foreign correspondent, Richard Engel, reports that raises fears about who else could be hiding in plain sight.
The man French officials describe as the mastermind behind last Friday's attacks was found just a mile from the stadium that was among his targets. There's an old Arab saying, the best place to hide is in the sun. But how did Abdelhamid Abaoud, featured in ISIS propaganda and linked by French officials to previous terror plots, manage to travel to Syria, then slip back into Europe perhaps more than once, assemble a group of attackers, amass an arsenal, and then plan and carry out a series of coordinated deadly attacks, all undetected? They found the ringleader, but clearly too late.
So the success was knowing who to look for, and the failure was not actually looking for it.
All of these people were known to some extent, to varying extents, if not by the French directly, by the security services of other countries in Europe, and we did not do what was necessary to keep track of.
Keeping track is harder now that thousands of refugees are landing unchecked on Europe's shores every day. If, as suspected, Abaoud or some of his accomplices were hiding among them, French Senator Nathalie Goulet says they'd have an easy run to Paris, even if they were on terrorist watch lists.
So if they're under surveillance, they can still move around?
Of course, cross border, because there's no border between European countries.
And now, a breakdown in border control between the Middle East and Europe. That means there could be more Abaouds coming.
How many other so-called masterminds are out there in France, in Europe?
I don't know, but the number is probably quite large.
Aboud was one of 10,000 names on France's terrorist watch list. The problem is actually watching them, something the security services are not doing. Lester?
Richard Engel, thanks. With ISIS again making threats of an attack on U.S. soil, the Attorney General and the FBI Director today tried to calm the fears so many Americans may be feeling right now. But are U.S. cities actually safer than those in Europe? Our justice correspondent Pete Williams on concerns of a copycat attack coming.
In New York City, police put on a show of force, largely intended to be reassuring, as U.S. officials brushed off an ISIS video that includes a segment juxtaposing pictures of guns and explosives with recycled still photos of Times Square.
We are not aware of any credible threat here of a Paris-type attack, and we have seen no connection at all between the Paris attackers and the United States.
The FBI's biggest worry? Dozens of potential homegrown extremists who have shown some response to ISIS propaganda. Who might, the FBI worries, try to carry out copycat attacks like what happened in Paris?
We are watching people of concern using all of our lawful tools. We will keep watching them, and if we see something, we'll work to disrupt it.
But the FBI's Comey said he's seen no sign of ISIS members coming to the U.S. in the past days or weeks. And while the Paris attacks have Western Europe on high alert, American officials say there are reasons why the U.S. is generally safer. Among them, the U.S. does not have the porous borders of Europe, where it's so easy to get from one country to another undetected. Far fewer Americans have gone to Syria to join ISIS and return. Police in Europe are overwhelmed trying to track the estimated 5,000 people there who've been to Syria and back, compared to what Comey said today is a number in the teens of people from the U.S. who've gone overseas, associated with ISIS, and come back. And Comey said the pace of attempts by people here to get to Syria slowed in the past 4 months. And officials say Muslims in the U.S. generally feel more welcome here, better assimilated than in Europe. Their cooperation has been important in alerting U.S. police to potentially suspicious behavior.
Tonight, several members of Congress are pushing to tighten scrutiny on people traveling here from countries where a visa isn't required. One senior Democrat called the visa waiver program the soft underbelly of national security policy. Lester?
Pete Williams, thanks. Heightened fears in the U.S. over Syrian refugees in the wake of the Paris attacks led the House to approve a bill today that would virtually halt all Syrian refugees from coming into the U.S. As Andrea Mitchell shows us, the Republican frontrunners drummed up the fear talk today to a new level.
Today, the fear about Syrian refugees got ugly on the campaign trail.
You know, if there's a rabid dog running around your neighborhood, you're probably not going to assume something good about that dog, and you're probably going to put your children out of the way. We have to have in place screening mechanisms that allow us to determine who the mad dogs are, quite frankly.
Donald Trump telling Yahoo he wouldn't rule out requiring Muslims to register and carry identification, and Trump saying the Syrians are coming.
Syrians are now being caught at the southern border, just like I said. They're going to be pouring in. We don't know who they are. Could be ISIS.
In fact, two Syrian families, including four children, presented themselves to U.S. Customs at Laredo, Texas, asking for asylum. In Manila, the president accused Republican lawmakers of playing politics.
The idea that somehow they pose a more significant threat than all the tourists who pour into the United States every single day just doesn't jive with reality.
Hours later, 47 Democrats voted against the president, joining Republicans to virtually stop refugees from Syria and Iraq from coming to the U.S. by requiring the Homeland Security Secretary, the FBI Director, and the head of National Intelligence to personally certify that each applicant is not a threat. An impossible task. Going against the tide, Hillary Clinton today.
Turning away orphans, applying a religious test, discriminating against Muslims, slamming the door on every Syrian refugee, that is just not who we are.
In Alabama tonight, Ben Carson again compared some Syrian refugees to rabid dogs, but called the news media dishonest for reporting his comments.
as the Paris attacks start fueling an angry debate here at home. Lester.
All right, Andrea, thank you. Still ahead tonight, the women of ISIS, Western Europe's first female suicide bomber, was one of a growing number of women radicalized by ISIS. What possesses them to join the militants who have murdered and enslaved so many? We're back from Paris with more now on the woman who detonated a suicide bomb during the raid on the ringleader of the attacks here. She's the first woman to commit that kind of horrific act in Western Europe. But she was just one of a growing number of women joining ISIS. Our Keir Simmons looks at how they're falling under ISIS's spell.
Some friends said she was fun. Others said she drank and took drugs. A stark contrast with Wednesday morning, when Hasna Eitbulacen's voice was heard amid a barrage of bullets. Seconds later, she became the first female suicide bomber in Western Europe. 10% of ISIS Western recruits are female, research says. Expert Francois Hugard says they're lured with false promises.
It's exactly the same process as those charming pimps, young
pimps. Like a pimp.
Yeah, yeah, like a pimp who takes a girl, who seduces her.
Once with Islamic State, they must always cover up and be accompanied by men. A girl can be married by the age of 9, says a manifesto by an ISIS all-women vigilante group. But the rules also allow them to leave the home if they choose to wage jihad. Online, ISIS women answer questions from potential recruits, like, should I bring a hairdryer?
We're seeing women acting as a mouthpiece for ISIS. They're reaching directly to other females.
20-year-old Hoda Muthana went to join ISIS from Birmingham, Alabama. Now she urges attacks on America, like the Paris attack by the terror cell Hasna Eitbulacen belonged to.
Her family say they never saw her open a Quran, like all the people of France. They cannot understand what she did.
Tonight, some neighbors claim she was mistreated as a child, perhaps offering a clue to the deadly path she took. Keir Simmons, NBC News, Paris.
We're back in a moment with a check on some of the other news of the day, including a first from the FDA, why you might be eating genetically modified fish in the future without knowing it. We're back now from Paris with some other news of the day. It was Judgment Day for former Subway pitchman Jared Fogle, sentenced to more than 15 years in prison for trading child pornography and having sex with underage prostitutes. Fogle pleaded guilty in August. The sentence was 3 years longer than prosecutors had sought. A new wave of violence in Israel today, where an American teen is among five people killed in a pair of attacks by Palestinians, one in Tel Aviv, the other in the West Bank. 18-year-old Ezra Schwartz was in Israel as a student, his family back in the Boston area tonight grieving his loss. For the first time, the FDA has approved a genetically modified animal, a fish, as safe for Americans to eat. It's a type of salmon engineered to grow twice as fast. Critics are concerned that the FDA doesn't require any different labeling for them. It will be a while before the salmon is available in the U.S. Right now, only two farms in Canada and Panama are approved to raise these particular salmon. When we come back, the story that's quickly becoming one of our most popular online, the power of a simple hug after such a horrible tragedy. Finally tonight, a story that really caught our attention here in Paris that's connecting with a lot of people around the world. There is a lot of fear and suspicion over what happened here last Friday, but our Kelly Cobiella has a story tonight of two Muslim men who were trying to heal the tensions one hug at a time.
In the Place de la République, stranger after stranger embraces, young and old, women and men.
This woman is saying, don't you see? I'm Jewish. He's Muslim.
This man stands blindfolded with the sign, I'm a Muslim and I'm told I'm a terrorist. I trust you. Do you trust me? If yes, hug me. One by one, Parisians approach and wrap their arms around him. Anas Al-Yobi is a Syrian refugee. Behind each of his hugs, a message.
We are Muslim, we are not terrorists, and we love French people.
Alastwani Abdul Rahman is just 17, also Muslim, also from Syria.
We want to show them that we are with them, we are not against them, and we love them, we love them. We don't hate anyone.
In this city where emotion is still so raw,
A simple hug can help with healing and understanding.
He's just like me, have the same blood in his vein. He have the same heart. He's not different.
While Paris is the city of light and of love, people here aren't normally in the habit of hugging strangers. But there's a new normal on these streets, finding strength and support in a simple gesture. Kelly Cobiella, NBC News, Paris.
Embracing a wounded city, that's going to do it for us tonight. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching, and good night from Paris.